Mr. Abish, Reel 5. Did any of the young boys take advantage of these homosexual advances to try and improve their life?
Well, at the time I didn't know. All I knew, they had privileges because they were called laufers, they were the messenger boys, right, for various things. They had special little uniforms, like, remember, black caps. Same uniform, except they had black chapeaus, where we had the striped chapeaus. And they looked quite, well-fed, you know, at the time. I myself was only in the camp, really, on a Sunday. The rest of the time, I was from the morning till evening away in the coal mine all day.
Can we move on then to the routine of the camp? You've mentioned Ravelli and Appel. What about the ablutions, and what facilities were there for washing and shaving?
There was latrines, after every couple of huts or so, and there was a latrine in the middle, that sort of like looked like a hut. Just went in there, and you sat over like a plank of wood, right? And this is where you did the business.
Was there any privacy at all?
No privacy at all. You just sat one next to the other in most cases.
Was there any sort of restriction on actually using them?
Not that I know, no.
What about washing and shaving facilities?
I didn't shave, so I wouldn't know. I didn't shave till after I came to England.
Yeah. And washing?
No, washing was very hygiene, this camp. As I said, we got up at 2:30. Immediately, we walked naked to the shower rooms. After we had the showers, we put in the work clothes. In the evening, when we came back, we went straight to the shower rooms and we put in the camp clothes, right? And which was cleaner than the coal mining clothes. But twice a day we had showers.
Well, because of that, were you able to keep free of vermin?
Oh, there was absolutely no vermin whatsoever in this particular camp. You could eat off the floor, so clean. It looked like an Austrian guest house, right? And they are very, very known for being very, very clean. It was more of as a punishment, rather. In this particular camp, the hygiene was absolutely second to none. There was no lice, there was no bugs or anything like that, absolutely none at all. Each one had a bunk to himself, right? As I said, we were 125 till 150 boys in this one-story building, two-level building, which had, again, four sections, right? And it was actually built after I arrived. And I helped to build it as well, putting bricks on in the off-duty time. Used to make our own bricks like they made in Egypt years, 3,500 years ago, most probably, from clay, from mud, straw, put in little boxes, and then they dried up, and that's how they made it was red bricks, right? And most probably some timber structure on it, and that's how it was built.
Talking of the huts themselves, what about lighting arrangements and heating arrangements in them?
We had stoves, like a stove in the middle of a room, right? And there was a fire, but lights, there was not candlelight, there was proper electric light.
And how long did they stay on in the evening?
Well, 9 o'clock was Tiru Valley time. It had to be at 9 o'clock. Block had to be 9 o'clock, and then we were the morning shift, right? The part of the Bergschule. Bergschule, explained before, is the trainee coal miners. That's the translation.
What went on in the barracks once you came back? You said you were sort of after a certain period you had to go to bed. Before you were fed. After you had eaten.
Well, first we had to the shower room, then we came back. We came back to the thing, and we had the rest period, only known to our boys, right? And then at that time, I remember my brother used to come and visit me. He had free access because he knew the block Elster. He used to do work for him, for his clothes, right? So he could come in, and sometimes if he had something to food or anything, he used to bring me. And we used to start, not reminiscing, we used to start reminiscing about home, of course. And then eventually we came into the same, will we ever see our parents and our brothers again? Of course, I didn't know him at that time that my sister was anywhere as well. Also, through this, being on the first floor, not on the ground floor, you could overlook into the fields, and not far away it was this Russian prisoner of war camp, where we could see they were washing clothes outside, and they were having fires and cooking, but they weren't guarded, they were guarded by the Wehrmacht, not by the SS. And some of those who we met in, also in the coal mines. I could speak Russian, and I spoke to one or two of them, but they'd been captured already in the 1941-42, so they didn't know much about the war, what's happening. By the way, talking about the war, of course, as I'm talking now, it's already the period of time when the D-Day was happened to be by. I never knew, nobody knew in our camp anything, not even till Christmas of 44. Mm-hmm. What was happening.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe the rules and regulations that existed actually in the barracks that you might have to abide? I think you've already mentioned the beds, but you've said that the barracks were very clean. Were you responsible for sweeping out the barracks?
Most probably only those that stayed over during the day that swept the barracks. I didn't sleep. All you had to do was make your bed. There were special... a few boys who were actually in the block, who didn't go into work for one day or something, those were doing those type of jobs. Mm-hmm. And that was also the Stubenelster was in charge for that, not the block Elster. The block Elster is much higher up, right? It's much more up on that.
And again, you've talked about the soup rations you had. What other food were you given, and how frequently were you given it, and when were you given it?
Unless you organize yourself and stealing, over which we called organizing, like getting dog's biscuits and getting from under the ground, Steckriemen. Steckriemen means you would give the cows, you know, it's sugar apes, right? And that was also in the thing. We can get those and cut it up in slices and so on. But you had to risk a hell of a lot of, you had to play Russian roulette. Mm. If you're caught, you can get a tremendous punishment. For it.
I was referring to the actual rations that you were given.
Yeah, the rations is straightforward daily. Every second day we got a half a loaf of bread, and normally we had a quarter loaf with a bit of jam and margarine and a black coffee in the morning. That was by the time we came back from the shower rooms and we got dressed, it must have been around 3 o'clock in the morning or just after three. From there we stood a couple of hours or so in the Appellplatz, you know, raining or winter or summer, didn't make any difference, you see, until we actually been marched off about 6 o'clock in the morning to work. In the evening when we came back, after having the shower, and at the later stage, once we had this rest, we were served with a soup, which was practically, so I started eating in the early days, I couldn't eat it, but still sort of had to sort of eat it. Although I doubt we had any vitamins whatsoever in that soup, because it just tastes bitter and it had nothing in it. I remember in the summer of 44, where all of a sudden some food came through. It must have been tremendous amount of transport coming into Birkenau from Hungary, from all over. And most probably all this food that was left in the trains was fed into the camps, made soup, because some of the soup now had pieces of bread in it. And even cake, pieces of cake sort of thing, mixed into the soup. As long as it was sick, that was the main that filled you up. That was the main thing that you were looking for.
Did you know that at the time, or was that something that you were just
guessing?
No,
they were talking, you know, because we were getting all the time newcomers, lawyers, doctors, you know, people that just been picked up from home, from Budapest, or from whatever other cities, who came straight to Birkenau, from Birkenau straight to our place, right? They're the ones who didn't last very long, you know? And that was also now, you even had among the Jews, you had the Polish Jews, you had the Hungarian Jews, you had the Czech Jews, you had different type of Jews, and there was a nationality problem, a language barrier as well. Because Hungarian Jews couldn't speak German, they couldn't speak Polish, and they couldn't speak Yiddish. But with the area that I come from, we spoke Yiddish, and the Polish Jews spoke Yiddish, so there was no problem. Mm-hmm. But with the Hungarian Jews, they only spoke Hungarian. So it was a barrier in language there as well. Vivid, frightening thing what happened after the first few days arrived in this first group. I remember it was quite a, it was before Whitsun, because I know because it's covered by the Jewish calendar, we also have it. As we were all gathered, this camp, near the latrines, funny enough, in the back. You know, those that were in the camp, not those that went to work, because I didn't go still yet to the coal mines. And all machine guns surrounded. And we're standing for a few hours in the heat, you know, pounding us. And there's ropes hanging there, eight ropes. So we, the boys said, oh, that's it. They're going to do us in now. You know, and the boys were, you know, going us in. There says wouldn't give away, I think, about it. They just didn't even speak to us or anything. And after many hours, sort of like a black Mariah arrived, it was eight Jews who apparently tried to tunnel themselves. They were all block elders, you know, charge of blocks, and they tried to tunnel themselves out, and they were caught. And they were all stood up on tables. The assessor officer read out the things what they did. And my amazement also shouted to us, it's Lebensball, live well, and that they went. They didn't put up any resistance or anything. I mean, nothing they could do. And they were left hanging there for a while, and we were standing there, and then we dispersed. And it was like I was caved in sort of thing, you know, it was fright. Later on it happened various other hangings at a later stage.
Can you think of any other instances where people were punished for attempted escape?
Well, of course, certain things will stay with your memory a long time, because especially in the early days when you arrive to a camp and you haven't got to the routine and the hardness, and this all of a sudden they brought in on a Sunday, I remember, a young Jewish Slovakian boy who somehow managed to escape from a working party, which wasn't in a mine, somewhere in a building trade or something. And apparently he was quite away already, and he was caught in a station by the Poles, and he was handed back to the, having the number on his arm, and he had no way of getting out of it. So he was brought back to the camp, and for everybody to watch, he was hung up upside down and left hanging all the time till he died.
What was your reaction to this? I mean,
what could be reaction? Of course, it's immediately your foundation gets, you're getting punched, you know, you're punched more and more into, in such a fear, you know, in such a, that goes right through you, right? What can I expect? What can I, what's going to happen, right?
Did you ever have the opportunity to escape yourself?
Well, I couldn't see no way of escaping whilst you're in a camp itself. Auschwitz, definitely not. Because remember I mentioned the thing when we're looking through the window and just seeing the amount of machine gun posts, huge ones. There was no way a pin could get through. Well, in our own camp, being, you know, not very large. I mean, once you went over the no man's land, and then either you get shot by the sentries or you're already by the wall, by the electric wall. Going to work, it was also impossible because the fact that in every second row on each side there were already SS going with you all the way. In the coal mine, there was no way unless I can drill a few mile hole out my way in a few hours before I'm being missed, which is again talking nonsense. So it really was no escape at all.
In this situation, what ways did prisoners keep up their morale?
Well, little things, like I mentioned, you know, coming back from work and asking the others what for dinner, you know, what for supper, and they give you a big menu. A lot of little things you can have. Once you settle in, even with the hardship, you must have some kind of human something that can carry you, or make jokes or things like that, even in hardship.
What helped you in particular? Can you think of any instances which you, you know, enjoyed either someone's company or activities that you were
you joined. You see, I must mention this. There were a lot of fathers and sons in our camp. Of course, after a while, the fathers were taken away, what I mentioned before. Or it can happen that two friends will fight for each other, and it can happen my father and son will kill each other for a piece of bread, you know? Or even two brothers. But you see, it's a question of human, basic, animal things. You get it, even not being in a camp. You can play cards with somebody, you play golf with somebody. You can see the true nature of the person, the true animal instinct of the person. Right? You learn a hell of a lot about people in a situation like this.
What did you actually do?
There's cliques. You can create cliques. You know, you get your own friends, your own protection, right? Right? If anything happens, they protect you. I did mention, when I was given this job of filling the kabit lamps for the whole camp, that I have trouble. Because there were some Jewish boys who arrived in the summer of late summer of 1944 from Lodz Ghetto. They were a clique in themselves. And they were after my job, to get this job of filling the lamps, you know, to get the extra soup. There was quite a rivalry about it, you know. My side protected me against, there was no fighting or anything, it was just sheer envy.
Were there any social or cultural activities that you could take part in?
Not at all. This is a concentration camp. It wasn't a prisoner of war camp. Surely there were a certain amount of Austrians, I remember, there was actors, who were, there was a special room, actually it's the room that when we first arrived, we got a beating in that hall. That was like a theater, come to remember now. It was a stage. And sometimes I was drawn in to do the cleaning up there, or things like that, and they were rehearsing, you know, in German, of course, for a play, and in the evening for the SS.
But the prisoners themselves saw
prisoners
nothing of this?
No, were not invited. Maybe the kapos and the other thing, but not the actual prisoners were not invited. There was no recreation at all. There was no football or anything like that, and it was out of the question. If you were on Sunday spare time, they may just catch you to do some work. I myself used to hang around the kitchen, you know, outside, see if I can do, can volunteer for, you know, if you know if some of the chefs and so on, whether I can do, get inside there to help myself to something.
What else did you do on Sundays? Because that was your free day, wasn't it?
Yes, free day. Invariably, you were taking for menial jobs or something to carry, you know, again, cement or anything like that, you know, doing inside or cleaning outside or so on. And then, of course, we were a lot of boys, and we had discussions amongst ourselves on various things and subjects and so on.
Was there any sort of sense of humor that played a part in keeping morale up there?
There was after a while, after we settled in. You know, to the hardship, you know, things has to carry on. There was a certain amount of Mickey taking from against one another. Like, when it's to go to the shower room in the morning, one boy is to turn around and say, you've got a body like a female, you know, like a woman. Your shape is like a woman, you know, to that extent. You know, stick the Mickey out, things like that.
Did prisoners have nicknames and things like this? Was there sort of that sort of camaraderie at all develop?
Well, there was a certain camaraderie, you know, especially among my own hometown and the vicinity area, we more or less get together. Oh, yes, you're asking me about Sunday. I remember the boys that had their fathers there still in the early days before they didn't manage to survive. Used to see the father and used to go and talk to them and so on. I used to go and visit those in hospital on Sunday as well, the sick. You know, which were people that I knew. On Sunday, I was looking forward always to visit my brother in his block, because when it came out, they came out very early morning from the night shift, and it used to be, you know, there was sleeping time till about 1 o'clock. So eventually, I went to see him, and he was working in the night shift in this second stage of the coal mine. and he's completely changed. I could see a complete change in him. First of all, he looked very thin already. Whereby when he was working in the tailor shop, he was, you know, at least he had some meat on him, you know, but now he was really, his eyes, you know, were all, you know, from the coal mine, all black around, you know, and so on. And where before he used to prop me up to try and cheer me up, it was my turn now because he was really like losing hope, you know, it was end of the tether.
How did your brother try to sort of cheer you up? What did you say to one another to?
Well, in the early time, he tried, because being the younger brother, he tried many things, you know, to prop me up, you know, and saying that the war will be over soon, you know, something or other to that effect. Although we talked about that we may not see our parents, we still come back to it. It can't be so. It will be. Somebody will be about, right?
Can you tell me if religion played any part in keeping morale high?
I don't think it kept morale. It was like being brought up originally in an Orthodox way. I remember coming on the high holidays. We actually prayed in the evening on New Year. We played in the evening before we went to bed. You know, we had the prayers and so on. And I remember on Yom Kippur day, we actually fasted, and we did pray in the groups, you know, when they're working, when working together, we did some prayers in the coal mine. Of course, a lot of us knew by heart a lot of the prayers, being educated in the Jewish schools. We didn't need a book for most of the prayers. We could just rattle, you know, sort of read it from heart. It was very, very moving and very, very, everybody was crying, the boys. You know, of course, it gets worse if you go into that sort of thing. Like the day, I remember particularly, when we once came out from the coal mine and we couldn't walk the normal way because it was flooded. And we were taking a detour through a village. And we saw kids, we saw people walking, we saw shops, and we saw things. And it really sort of took hold of us. And when we came back, we were so subdued and so sad and so, you know, out of the routine, that because we were so isolated there and we saw all this, and it just, you know, really moved.
What precisely was it that did move you so much? Was it the sight of a normal life?
Sight of a normal life. And what have you done to be this way, and the other people are free in doing those things?
Was there any occasion when the camp routine changed?
Yes, I remember one occasion. Actually, it was in the middle of the week, and we're not going to go to work. We didn't know the reason at the time. And then about midday, the whole camp was gathered outside the kitchen. So it was sort of like a big, you know, like a big car park, or, you know, sort of a place. And all lined up with tables, food. And as we were going along in the queue, they were giving us fascherten, which is similar to hamburgers, with mashed potatoes. Of course, it was a Red Cross visit to the camp. And everything was camouflaged in the hospital and everything. And we got more food than we could possibly handle. We ate ourselves sick because there was some potato soup left. Even after 2 days, it was so sour, and we still ate it. And I had the runs for days after that. And that was the only time we had a feed.
Did you actually see members of the Red Cross there?
Yes, we saw them, but we couldn't speak to them because there were a lot of sets going with them. Right, but no prisoner actually talked to them.
How long did their visit last?
They were there the whole day. During that day, yes. An incident happened through that Red Cross. Remember, I mentioned that most of the people once a week or once every fortnight, where they gathered a lot of those who couldn't work. I actually met. I didn't meet them personally. Somebody from my hometown. 10 of them, instead of being taken to Birkenau, actually were taken to Sweden. He died about 10 years ago in Israel. And I always thought he was dead. You know, he was in one group that was taking, his name was Archie Feig, right? And he lived in Beersheba.
Why was he taken to Sweden?
Because it must have been through the Red Cross that one particular party of 10 were actually taken to Sweden.
Was that because they were ill or in the hospital or something?
No,
like
they
that?
Were the ones that were picked out for not being able to work already. It's just that particular time that's what happened, and I only found that out after the war, not knowing that time, you know, while I was there.
You mentioned during the Red Cross visit that everything was camouflaged. What do you exactly mean by that?
I mean by that that those Häftlinge, which we call prisoners, those that looked very bad, who were Muslim men, were sort of hidden in various blocks, except the people, those were genuine in hospital, so they did visit the hospital, the Red Cross. So they didn't tell us anything about it, but we knew about it, that those that appeared before the kitchens for the food were those that went to normally to work, right? And the others were more or less hidden in the background.
When were these preparations carried out?
I didn't see them being carried out, but all I know, they weren't there mm-hmm. at the time that we were served the food. There were only those that were regular who were going to work.
Was there any attempt made by the prisoners to try and get a true picture across the Red Cross? Was there any contact
no,
made?
There was too many SS milling around, actually, in the in the area, and also the higher up, the capos, the Vorarbeiters, and the Lager Elsters and the Block Elsters and so on. So of course they were with the other side.
Can you think of anything else that happened at Filstengruber that you think might be important to mention?
Well, there was a very forceful hanging. In, I think it was October 1944, where my own Block Elster, who was a Polish gentleman, very nice man, and apparently five of them, including the Lager Elster, his name was Hermann, who arranged something about a lorry. Underneath the lorry was supposed to be a box built, and they're supposed to have gone inside the box and been driven out from the camp. And when they attempted to hang them, it took a long time because they were spitting and they were shouting and they were kicking, and they were really creating a lot of trouble for the Germans, and they were swearing at the German, at the SS, and all the thing.
These were the people about to be hung.
About to be hung. Also, my own Block Elster screamed in to tell us, saying that Hermann, the Lager Elster, has given them away. And he's supposed to go on with them, but he has given them, shot them. And then it took a long time for the SS to read out the sentence because it kept on being interrupted. It took about an hour before the ordeal went through. And of course, we had to all watch. And any time there was a hanging, most of the people who were in the camp had to attend to it.
Was there any reaction of the prisoners to even try and help them or intervene at this stage?
No, of course not. I mean, it was completely... It's very difficult to say it, but there was no way you could have helped them.
And what about the Lager Elster, Hermann, who...
Well, apparently, I don't know whether he's alive after the war, because I heard from somebody who was in a boat going to Denmark, and this boat was sunk by British bombers.